This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Renegade Report. I'm Jonathan.
And Roman is present. And believe it or not, Jonathan, we actually are continuing the podcast.
Sitting next to each other, as you can hear, in studio.
I mean, despite what people thought, last week we had a disagreement on an issue, and people thought this podcast was ending for some reason.
We were done. That's the world of Twitter and the world we now live in. You can't disagree unless you block people. You know, that's how all interactions must
end. No, but I mean, this podcast...
Either you've got to block them, or you've got to destroy their lives, or you've got to sue them.
Well, I mean, if you had a life to destroy, I would do it. But unfortunately, not much is happening there. So no, the podcast will carry on, and we will disagree. I mean, that's the essence of being here today, and driving many miles to be here. And
yes, Roman, of course, had to drive from his very large farmlands that he owns. You know, hectares and hectares of them. Apparently not very important to Moletti and Becky, very important to John Steenhuisen. Weird, that.
Right. Finally, someone said it, right? Moletti and Becky says, this is just a ploy to scapegoat the whites, and the ANC are using the EFF to develop their policy. Like, and yes, it's obvious.
He also basically turned around and said, this is a 2019 election campaign, folks.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, which we've both said previously on the show.
In 2016, they used the war room and racism.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's land and white people. So sort of the same thing, but same tactics.
Well, just they clearly, as I said, they're using the same PR company in Sandton, and it's just a slightly repackaged version of the same thing.
Do you know the PR company?
No, I don't. But they are good at their job.
Got the last one closed down.
I must give them credits. I must give. Yeah, I think that was just a side business, the sort of Bell Pottinger thing.
I mean, Bell Pottinger, how fucking
central
dumb.
Campaigns.
I mean,
are
if
different.
The Guptas came to me with £100,000 a month, was it? I would give them like a shit hot strategy, like brilliant strategy. And they're like, oh no, fuck, blame the whites all the time. That won't work. You can't blame everyone all the time. You can just say, this is the essence of BEE. Look how well we've done. And they've done well. I mean, at Home Affairs, it's much easier now to do things because the Guptas put them in touch with VFS Global. And it works really well. They supplied coal to Eskom at a cheaper rate. Great, yeah. But they've done well. It's more efficient.
Yeah.
So the Guptas have done well. That's the strategy. You don't say, oh, fucking Johann Rupert doesn't want to give his cars away. That's so dumb. Anyway.
Right. And many people are rejecting those things, as shown by our download numbers. You would like people to even further download the show. For what reason, Roman?
To own the libs.
That's and right. Specifically one lib. That would be Eusebius.
The king of libs.
Who we keep beating in the podcast rankings. Even in his sort of, I'm going to get AfriForum podcast that he did this past week. Beat that one as well, which had good listenership, I'm sure.
But as someone said on Twitter, Eusebius is not happy that you're on top of him.
All right. And that's where the gay jokes will stop. Or maybe not.
It could be Brazilian jiu-jitsu or wrestling.
Yes, that is a wonderful euphemism. And for more of those today, we've got someone back in studio, a voice you've heard before, Miguel Bellona, who is a film director and producer and a number of other things. And we thought we would do a slightly political show, but more lighthearted as well about film.
More cultural show.
Yes, which can also be lighthearted, Roman. but let's start off with political. DSTV has lost 100,000 subscribers, about R1 billion a year. Ramon, are you one of them?
They lost me like 4 years ago.
And me about 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. How's it, guys? Yeah, 2 years ago. Two and a half, nearly three.
Well,
as soon DSTV.
As soon as Netflix launched, I cancelled the month after.
Joe, yeah. you were a quick adopter.
Well,
then I got fiber. I'm like, fuck this shit. I can get anything I want for free. So,
I think like the biggest issue is that they honestly are whining now that it's like you can lose in business, you can gain whatever. Like, I think they did like a relatively decent job for 20 odd years. I mean, they do dominate the sports market, and a lot of people who watch that like watching their broadcasts internationally. They're well recognized as very good at that. specific job, but they've been usurped. Like, the market has changed, and now they're whining that, like, Netflix exists.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. The big thing is that they just didn't keep up. I mean, when DStv came out, they were awesome. I mean, if you think about it, the entertainment back then, we only had SABC 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
And generally, the really good shows, I mean, you had some cool shows on SABC 1 and 2, but the really cool shows were on SABC 3.
And Mnet.
And Mnet. But, I mean, you were limited to that when it became DStv. I mean, you had, as they call it, a bouquet, you know, of channels. You had a ton of stuff. And back then, repeats weren't really an issue because we hadn't seen a lot of stuff yet, you know. So back then, yeah, it was cool, but they just didn't keep up.
And to download an episode off the internet would take about 2 weeks. Yeah. So you couldn't be like, oh, America saw it, I'm going to see it tonight. You had to actually wait the 3 months they would make you wait to see
Yeah, exactly.
The episode.
You know, but we were happy then to have that, you know. Yeah. Structured TV, I mean, the idea of non-linear TV is also, and binge watching.
Yeah.
That's changed the way TV is being consumed. And DStv, they put out their Showmax. But I think it's too late. It's very much like how Vodacom and MTN were complaining about WhatsApp. You know, like, you had years to do something of your own. You know, you had that time to spend and develop something that people could move on to use. And instead, you just sat there thinking, oh, SMS money is going to make me millions forever. And then WhatsApp came and said goodbye. And then it's data. And then it's whatever. It's the same thing here with DStv. It's also internet. You know, our internet infrastructure allows us to be able to watch Netflix now, and they're just not keeping up.
Well, what's interesting about the arguments about the competition is that the competition is not beholden to, you know, state regulations. So, and the argument is that they should be beholden to state regulations, not to deregulate. So, no, like, fuck you, multi-choice. I don't give a shit if you need, like, and then the argument, oh, we've got 4,000 black employees. I'm sure you got white ones and Indian ones too. Yeah, and like, don't you give a shit about them if you go?
Yeah, it's very cynical playing of the race card.
Oh, God. Yeah. Like, it's really pathetic.
Yeah.
After a while. Pathetic. Instead of saying deregulate so we can compete with Netflix and whoever else.
And actually, they'd increase the employee base. If they were deregulated, they'd probably increase the people they employ.
Yeah, absolutely. And they can hire fucking 5,000 more black employees, the ones that really matter to them, as opposed to the other ones. But no, I mean, you sort of feel sorry for them in a way that they're behind the times, but the arguments for being behind the times is such shit because they use that monopoly to fuck everyone over for 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, well, look at what was it, like R1 billion or something ridiculous on that building, on that building that they modified and renovated for themselves.
Yeah.
Well, that's why they need that money. And at the end of the day, they complain about, we need to regulate things or whatever, but how many years have they had the monopoly on sport and they've used that sport for themselves? And now they're complaining about other people who have come in with their own kind of advantages.
And sport is incredibly enriching from a television rights perspective. If you go look, I was looking at the English Premier League and what each of the teams earned this season. even the teams towards the bottom of the ones who get relegated are earning sort of 50 million, 60 million pounds, somewhere around there. And the majority of that money is coming from television rights, not from anything else, not from ticket sales, not from merchandise as a separate entity, but television rights are the main reason why, you know, people will complain that a footballer gets paid fortunes of cash, but that's where the money's coming from because there's millions or billions of viewers around the world.
Exactly, you know, and them holding that sport is all that keeps DStv alive.
That subsidizes everything else.
That is all that keeps them alive. That's the moment that goes. The moment, I mean,
but they're even not willing to innovate there. So, for example, I cancel my DStv, and I quite enjoy international cricket and rugby. I'm not big on watching sort of the super rugby season, but I do enjoy watching the Springboks play, for example. And since I've cancelled, I obviously don't have that access. So I've either got to go to like a pub or a sports bar or something like that, or I've got to go to a friend if I want to watch it, who's still got DStv, or I just miss out. It's simple as that. I know there are nefarious means to kind of try access.
Nefarious for who?
It doesn't matter. You can. Reterm it if you prefer, but the point is I don't really have access, and I would be more than happy if they came out and said, look, if you pay us, you go here, credit card link, give us $50, and you can watch the Springbok match for the day. We'll unblock our signal for you or whatever. I would probably pay that for certain matches. I mean, they're not clever enough to do that. They can see their entire model collapsing in front of them. And someone's going to come forward. Like Netflix or a Netflix kind of person is going to come forward to SA Rugby and go, yeah, it's fine. That's great. You've got that deal with DStv. What we're going to do is we're gonna pull that feed and we're going to offer it to people at X amount of money and we're going to give you a profit share of that. And eventually the deals that have been set up between MultiChoice and all these sports organizations are going to fall apart because someone's going to come with something better. And DStv is in the prime position to right now go ahead and go, no, before anyone beats us to the punch, we're going to do that for you. But they're not. And I can see their sports entity collapsing as well.
They're not listening to the public.
Mm.
That's the problem. The public is saying to them, give us packages that are structured, that are just sport, or that are like movies, series, and sport, or just give us smaller packages that we can afford. R1,000 a month is a fuckload of money to spend on nothing. Like, what are you spending it on? Netflix is R150. You get a ton of shows. Between Netflix and YouTube, I get everything I want. Yes, I don't watch sport. I used to be an avid follower of sport. Past couple of years, I just don't watch sport.
Yeah, you've grown up.
I literally just don't watch sport. Just let it go. Yeah.
That's what happens when you put on man pants and grow up and have children. You just don't watch sports anymore.
They're really tight around the crotch, but it's okay. I've got it used to.
Just spread out there. This is a feminist-free studio.
So anyway, MultiChoice, if you are listening, we will clearly give you advice, much less than consultancy fee applicable, but
just listen to the public, really.
Not as
they've been telling you for years.
Don't give away the strategy, dude. For fuck's sake. Anyway, so DStv out of the picture. So, Miguel, you do movies, and I wanted to go watch Five Fingers for Marseille, which is this South African Western set in the Karoo that is spoken in Sotho. I haven't watched it yet, commitments. But it had a huge hype, and the trailer was excellent. And like a lot of money was put into this. I mean, you haven't seen it, have you?
No. It's on my list of movies that I wanted to watch, and I think I did tweet about it a while ago. I just put out the trailer, and I even said, this is what we should be pumping out. It is the kind of movie that we should be pumping out, but it suffers, you know, if we look back at our conversation that we had the last time, it suffers from marketing. Nobody's pushing it out, really. I mean, it's not getting strong marketing. Look, what has been marketed? Of course, Infinity War has been marketed. Everybody sees Infinity War. Does anybody even know that Five Fingers for Marseille exists? That's the one point. Another point, it should have been English, in my view.
Really?
I think that the language, that kind of movie, when I look at it, it looks like a very gritty, I wouldn't say it's the same movie because it's not the same movie, but I don't know if you watched Kung Fu Hustle, where they kind of create this like but it's like a separate little world that exists in a pseudo, it's like a hyper real world, because it's not a real existence in this Western and this town or whatever. It's fantasy, and it's done so stylishly and so cool. Had it been done in English, I think it would have been a movie that you could easily have sold in Australia, in England, even in America, because it's a really start. I mean, you're not going to make hundreds of millions, but you could have put it out and made $10 million around. So and this that's is 150 million.
There's data for this. I mean, producers know that if you subtitle your movie, you immediately decrease the sort of ability to sell that movie. You may very well still sell it, but the volumes that you sell, the tickets you sell to people in general, lots of people don't like going to movies that have subtitles. And so you create an entirely different market. So it's an interesting point you make. I suppose they were looking for some sort of authenticity and difference, perhaps when they
sure, did it. Sure, but it's a semi-fantastical Western.
Yeah,
in the Karoo.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, if you were going to make a movie that is specific to the culture, if we do like an Apocalypto, if you had done Apocalypto in English, the sincerity of that movie would have fallen apart.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You know, you would have watched it and gone, oh, it's like 10,000 BC. If they had just done that subtitle and had the guys going, that movie would have been 1,000 times better instead of the really bad English dialogue that we got. So there are times when you got to go the right language or whatever, but I think Five Fingers for Marseille, the type of movie that it was, I feel that if it had been English, I think it could have been marketed to a wider group, and also the title, like
Well, the other thing to say about...
nobody's going to go, there's a catchy movie to watch.
And once again, not commenting on the content of the film because I haven't seen it. Maybe it is spectacular. Perhaps it's the best South African film ever made.
The reviews are
great.
I love it. Yeah,
I'm not bashing the movie itself, but I think another thing we still haven't gotten over is we seem to want to chase awards rather than chasing audiences. It's been a South African problem forever. So we consider success. Film success in this country is considered when you go win some award at a film festival, the sort of higher up on the echelon of film festival it is, if you win a Cannes or if you get as far as the Oscars, then that's success. Whereas what Hollywood views as success is bums in chairs. So they will view the guy who produced Infinity Wars will not win an Oscar. and the guy who produced I don't know if it was Guillermo who produced The Shape of Water, but whoever produced that film, if it was him or someone else, they won an Oscar for it, right? That movie did make a lot of money, so it's not the best example, but there are films that go on to win Oscars and no, they don't make a lot of money, and Hollywood views a greater success as a commercial success before an award success. If you can get both, that's amazing. But we need to start understanding commercial success. I think Five Fingers for Marseille, just in content and what they've tried to do, does at least try and target something like that. So it's not the old, boring kind of, this is South Africa. Mm. The state police are breaking down a door. The black people are holding burning things and the white people are firing guns. It's not that old staid story. Not that you can't tell that story in a commercial way, but it hasn't been done yet, frankly. And it's nice that the content is progressing, but maybe chase audience.
Yeah, I was very excited about it. When I watched the trailer, I was blown away by it. Honestly, I watched it and I was like, yeah, this looks cool. Visually, the way it's created, the fact that they try to do something different narratively, I was really blown away by that. And it's exactly where I think we should be going. Just fix those minor little things, and I think we can have box office success.
Yeah, because you did moan previously. What?
He's not a big moaner, so I'm
but you moan that we're trying to make movies that have some sort of emotional resonance and trying to, explore themes that are really political or historical or whatever, instead of just making fun movies.
Yeah, our balance is off.
Yeah.
Our balance is off. And that's why Leon Schuster makes...
And this looks like...
vast quantities
although
of money.
He hasn't for a while.
No, he hasn't for a while, but when he does, he makes vast quantities of money because he's literally one of the only people in our country making movies that entertain.
For fun,
He's not worried about making awards. I mean, clearly he's not worried about getting awards. Well, you know what I mean? But
his next movie will be a hate crime.
It should be. No, I'm just kidding.
No, his previous ones should be hate crimes as well.
Well, I think being diabolical. If you were to
blackface now,
if you release Panic Mechanic today,
amazing, eh?
Panic Mr. Mechanic
Bones,
released today,
bro. Mr. Bones. There was like 12. No, honey,
and that,
ago.
And that was the big moneymaker for
probably
him. Eh?
It was just before, not just before the World Cup, 2006, probably somewhere around there.
Mr. Really? Bones took out the title, but I mean, people were more relaxed then. You know, you can't
imagine
like,
white people
laugh at each other.
That's white fine. People culturally appropriating cavemen.
The good thing about his films, maybe that's violence. Why he hasn't made another one. Maybe he's a guy to get into the studio,
Maybe because he's got fuck-off money. He doesn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, better. Can you imagine
he sits down and he goes, I'm going to make another movie, right? And, I mean, his movies ripped off everyone. They really did.
Which is why they worked.
I think they ripped into all the sort of, well, not all, but at least they tried to rip into all the cultures, races, etc. But he sits down now and he goes, okay, cool, we're going to make another movie. Great, so we're going to have this white guy dressed up as... No, wait, hold on, can't do that. Okay, so we're going to have this black guy pretend... No, can't do that.
I know, we're going to have this black guy that wants fees to fall and then say he loves Hitler. Oh, wait, that's reality. We can't satirize...
That's why we can't do
parodies. We can't satirize life anymore.
Just gotten too ridiculous.
All right, well, life is parody, yeah. It's become parody.
So, most overrated movie of the last 2 years, and this is probably a hate crime, Black Panther. What a piece of shit. Not shit. Same
really,
old.
Ramon?
I'm middle of the road.
Same old thing. When the villain has more reason to exist than the hero, that's when you know your movie's failed.
Yeah, look, I'm a bit mixed on Black Panther. I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think it's a bad movie. I thought it was a solid Marvel flick. I don't think it's. I think it's on the same level as Doctor Strange and.
That's a solid D+.
Iron Man 2 and yeah, they're kind of.
You watch it, Marvel, it entertains you, and then you move on, right?
Marvel films. Look, I mean, his suit is bad. There's cool stuff. I mean, his suit is badass. I dug him as a – I mean, maybe he's a little bit bland, but in comparison to the other Marvel characters, he's different, which I liked. Like, he's a little bit more thoughtful and that kind. He's not always with a chirp and always got to have a cocky comment about something, which I quite like.
It's you, Captain America.
He's always got to have some chirp.
Iron Man.
Fuck you. Iron Man makes the best chirps.
Yeah, but Iron Man's built to chirp. You know, it's like Spider-Man. You know, they're there for that. I felt that the villain was weak. I know a lot of people were like, Killmonger is amazing. I was like, oh, please. Like, all he did was snarl and snarl a little bit more and then break things and snarl a bit more. Look, the concept behind his thing was that Wakanda was...
Why do you think it's so overrated, Roman? Do you think it's just because there was so much hype?
No, basically, it's a tired old story with black characters, and now it's like a historical cultural event, and it's really not.
Yeah, but
it's a boring story.
Soft bigotry of low expectations,
good,
right?
Good graphics, average acting. If it was Iron Man 4, people were like, okay, cool, it's Iron Man 4. Like, I mean, it's not superior to Thor Ragnarok, even like in terms of Marvel. And I don't like Marvel movies generally, but it's a really average Marvel movie.
Well, I haven't seen Thor Ragnarok. Apparently, that's awesome.
Also,
it's more fun than Black Panther.
Really.
But it depends on your view. I have a feeling that you might actually enjoy it a lot more. The sense of humor is just not up my alley. A little too slapsticky.
My favorite Marvel over the last 10 years, bearing in mind that Iron Man 1 is just over 10 years ago. I'm talking about Marvel produced, which Iron Man 1 was the first one. And I still think that's their best film. It was Guardians of the Galaxy 1. I loved that film.
Top 3 films for me. Well, I mean, I really like Infinity War, but Guardians of the Galaxy, Iron Man, Captain America, Winter Soldier. Those are the 3
that you think
by
are the best.
By far, their best. Yeah, the rest of them, kind of in the middle, you know, middle
Deadpool,
of the road.
Man.
But that's a 20th Century Fox, and I don't count that or the X-Men movies. I think the upcoming ones, because now that Marvel has bought 20th Century Fox, I think we can count those because they're going to relaunch Fantastic Four. I cannot wait for that, like a proper Fantastic Four.
They'll be done properly.
Yeah, where the characters, you know what a cool movie Fantastic Four should be?
The shittiest characters under the sun. They're all fucking
boring.
It's like Power Rangers that can stretch and
But it should be a fun movie, and it's just not fun. Look, I enjoy them as a.
They also deal with the same. Every one of those films so far deals with the exact same issues, right? So, you forget the character, but the guy who's the Rock, basically.
Dwayne Johnson.
No. The Fantastic Four, the Rock, the thing. It's always like him dealing with becoming the thing, and that he's grotesque. And like, fuck, who cares, man? Like, make a movie where he's like over it, and he's happy with who he fucking is. Like,
like in the comics, he's kind of looking, yeah. He deals with it a lot, but. I mean, he's been doing it for 50, 60 years, so they've kind of over that.
Yeah, they kind of deal with the same shit again. Every time they reboot, they deal with the same crap over and over again. It's like Spider-Man always having to deal with
origin
the Aunt
stories.
May thing, right? And it's like, all right, it's better when you leave, like, just Aunt May can be there, but, like, let's not make it a sob story. It's fine. She's Aunt May. It's great.
Yeah.
On the side there.
Yeah, over there, it's just about diversifying the narratives, I guess.
So you loved Infinity Wars?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fantastic.
What about the criticism that, you know, that the people they killed, they didn't really kill because everyone knows that they're either not dead.
Spoiler alert, fuck's sakes.
I haven't said who died. so the
Dumbledore people, dies, I think.
Dumbledore dies, yeah. And also Luke.
Skywalker.
Yeah. Oh. So the argument being some main characters die. But they don't really die because we know in real life that they're actually signed to contracts to do movies in like a year's time.
Yeah.
Plus, there's a second Infinity War, basically, where a lot of this is probably going to get reversed.
In a year.
So some people, it's just a unnecessary film almost in a way. It's gratuitous.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's TV, man, ending something on a cliffhanger.
It's economics. Like the fucking Hobbit is like 50 pages long and they made a 9-hour film.
But I mean, everybody's going to get to the end and be like, oh, my favorite hero, are they going to come back? Watch Avengers next year, 2019, April 18th, and they're going to get another $1 billion opening. I mean, geez, like this movie made $250 million in the US over this opening weekend, yeah. 690 worldwide.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. And it's opening weekend.
You see, that's why I have no hope for humanity. But people think like a Marvel movie gives them meaning.
But you know what it is? It's entertainment.
It's also 10 years. I mean, they've been building that. If you've been a fan for 10 years, if you think about it, that's more than 10% of somebody's life that those movies represent for you. And if you're at that age of a movie-going kind of guy in the young age group where you actually are able to
you started
movies,
watching when you were 10.
You're hooked on those things. Yeah. So by the time you get to Infinity War now and everything's wrapped up, even though there's been mediocre movies in between, you're excited to see this villain that's kind of wrapping up all of these stories, which is why they've built up to where they are now, which is this massive industry. But have they reached the peak?
Like 5 years ago, yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, you'd say that, but they're still making ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah, because people
Black Panther's the third or fourth highest grossing movie. Infinity War is now going to top that easily. It's like, wow, they're making billions. Kevin Feige, the producer that started this Marvel thing, I don't think he gives a shit about winning awards. He can buy them all, like literally every single Oscar. He could go out and buy them.
Can Marvel get a little bit deeper though, like DC is essentially?
Yeah, but then you stop making money.
No, DC shit though.
Although Logan made money. I got to say that.
Shit.
Logan made money.
Yeah, and Logan made money, and Logan was liked for that exact reason.
And it was deep and it was hard.
And Logan is the best superhero movie since
Dark Knight
trilogy.
Yeah. Okay, so I disagree with both of you on that, but it's fine. I'll let you have the point.
Okay, fine. Have your 80s shitty music with fucking Guardians and a speaking raccoon.
The amazing problem with Logan was Professor X, but anyway, it was just fucking irritating.
But you're talking about taking a comic book movie, giving a deeper meaning.
Well, what
which
I'm
Logan
saying is,
really did.
If you people who are, you know, into their comics, really deep into their comics, and go to these films, and then actually are referencing back to comics, and going, no, that's not correct or whatever, and they do get it quite spot on. But the biggest difference between DC and Marvel is that. Marvel characters are like fun characters. They're not particularly deep. They don't deal with like deep personal matters and problems. That's why Batman works, for example. Batman is not only DC's best character, but he's, in my opinion, and I don't know the universe that well, but of what I know, but he's also represents what they try to do with their characters, which is so layered and so deep. There's so many things, and they're not just good, for example. They're evil as well, and they're conflicted in what they do. And that's why Dark Knight works so well, because Christopher Nolan got that spot on in understanding Batman. And in the second film where you see the Joker and you're like, okay, who's the bad guy here? Is it Batman? Is it the Joker? They're both bad, actually. That's what DC's about. So I maybe audiences aren't into that anymore. I don't know.
I don't know if they're not into it, but it's the difference between mainstream and kind of, I suppose, I mean, they're both mainstream,
niche.
But one's kind of a little less mainstream because it deals with bigger issues. Marvel has been outsiding DC Comics for quite a while because they are more fun. But DC do deal with deeper issues at times. I mean, there was a one series called Identity Crisis, which was pretty intense. I mean, it was about another superhero being like a serial killer and killing other superheroes. But it deals with a lot of kind of internal issues. To say, I think Spider-Man deals with human issues, you know, it deals with a boy trying to deal with a girl, you know, in school. Mm. And so it's kind of more surface level, but it's probably stuff that we can
it's more
relate
relatable.
To. Exactly. Whereas I find DC more like high end conceptually, like they've got high end conceptual ideas and ideological ideas, and people find it difficult to get into. If you look at Batman versus Superman, I personally, if you watch the director's cut, I loved it. The ultimate cuts until you get to Doomsday, which is clearly a studio note going,
yeah, we need a monster.
We can't just have these two guys arguing about ideologies, because that's effectively what Batman versus Superman is. Let's put a big dude at the end so we can fight and blow shit up.
Yeah.
Cool. And then that's the weakest
and
part.
And unity
of the
and all that shit. Yeah, you know, I mean, they've got to unite because ultimately they're the
looking at building to Justice League, etc. But
I did ruin the movie though.
But
it
whole
was very good for the first three quarters.
You know, because they're dealing with big issues, and a lot of people gave it hassles because where's the jokes? You know, where's the jokes? That's what Marvel does. You know, they give us jokes every 2 seconds, and that's what people want.
That's why Watchmen.
They want Leon Schuster.
That's why Watchmen didn't work. Even though it's a fantastic movie.
One of the best comic book adaptations, actually.
It's Zack Snyder. Like, that's what you know. Zack Snyder is actually a good fucking director.
Ugh, but they messed him around in Justice League.
Controls things. I mean, we were talking just before the show, Star Wars, Last Jedi.
Best Star Wars movie.
No, really.
Really. Someone who doesn't
care,
I really enjoyed it.
Well, there we go. You know, so
I think Rogue One is the best Star Wars movie, frankly.
But in terms of aesthetics, Rian Johnson did something really special with The Last Jedi. In terms of how it looked,
the
look was fantastic.
It was stunning. Yeah. Like some of that sequence at the end.
Yeah,
I mean, it's imprinted on my mind. I know that they made a point to show, like, this isn't Hoth. You know, like they had that little shot. I laughed in the cinema, actually, where he touches the salt and it's like, it's salt. Just in case people don't want to confuse it with Hoth from Empire. Just please don't confuse it.
Not the same planet.
But that was cool, like with the red underneath. And I mean, that whole sequence where Kylo Ren and Luke are having that one-on-one and you're seeing him slide. And it's very anime, the way it's cut, the way it's shot, where he slides on the red and it appears. And then you see like Luke's footprint doesn't come and all those kind of things. I mean, it was sick. It was shot really nice, and there was really cool stuff. But there was
what's wrong with
multiple story problems.
There was just lots of problems.
Yeah,
lots of problems.
So much missed opportunity. So there was two biggest missed opportunities for me. Was firstly the way they sort of kill Luke in the end, the way they get rid of Luke.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this movie yet, seriously,
what are the few?
Get over it. They don't kill him, but he's sitting on a rock on his island, and he's kind of meditating, and he's astral projecting himself onto this planet where this fight is going on. And I think it was a big error, because if he had become one with the Force, which is what they were trying to denote, that he was so in control, that he should have just put himself on that planet, physically put himself on that planet, or they could have even said that he got his... what's his name from the bottom of the ocean there, and he flew it there, whatever. It doesn't really matter how they got him there. The problem is he appears and he's standing there, and then they all fire on him, and it's like, well, no one survives that, and then he does survive, and you're like, wow, that's amazing. And then when you realize that he's not actually there, you're like, oh, it's not actually that amazing.
A bit of a downer. Yeah.
Whereas if he had actually been there and actually survived it, which you could always argue in the context of the universe that they've created, it would have been far more impressive. That was the one big issue for me. I mean, there was stupid stuff around how they get out that cave and those stupid wolves. This is the Disneyfication of things, right? Yeah. So Disney has to add in animals that don't matter, like nobody gives a shit about.
No, but you know why they put those funny...
Yeah, so they can make fuzzy animals for children.
Those puffin things. It was more difficult to erase the puffins digitally than to just change them to those, whatever you call those.
Oh, the porgs.
Mm. Yeah, porgs. It's easier. It was easier to change them into that than delete them.
Is it like with a porg, for example, like in terms of Disneyfication?
Yeah.
Where Chewbacca is sitting there with that lacquer roasted fried porg, and he's looking at the porg, and the porg's like all sad with him. Disney says, no, don't eat it. Like, feel bad about it.
Yes. But
Chewbacca would have been like, well, you're next, bud. That's what Chewbacca would have
absolutely
done.
Absolutely.
So there's Disneyfication.
And then the second scene where there's big Disneyfication is you get this fight scene now with Rey and Kylo Ren. And they're both fighting together. And you have an opportunity to change the entire dynamic of the Star Wars universe. You can make them unify, essentially, and then you can go anywhere with it, really.
But then sex comes, and that's not Disney.
What did you think of where that should have gone?
I actually didn't mind I'm over the moon with Kylo Ren. I think he's by far the best character in the new Star Wars movies. I know a lot of people were upset that he killed Snoke. I was like, sweet, because that oak was useless. I mean, I dug the way he used his powers in that in the second one, but he was a character I didn't like from the first one. I don't really like him in the second one, and I actually like that he's actually just a step up for Kylo Ren to basically become the new emperor, and I really hope that he doesn't soften out and become a good guy at the end. I hope he really continues to be the absolute badass that he can be. I don't mind that narrative between the two of them. I think it's interesting. I think it's like it's the most interesting thing in that movie.
Yeah, you need antagonist protagonist tension. That's what they create. Really.
Yeah.
But anyway, I want to talk about the Oscars this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, go.
Because I watched, out of the top 10, I think, I can't remember what they are anymore, I watched 4, and Shape of Water was like the worst one by far.
Fish sex movie.
I haven't seen The Shape of Water.
I'm not interested.
I'm keen. Guillermo del Toro and doing an adult fantasy. I mean,
That's what I thought.
Those things amazing.
Pan's Labyrinth is one of the best movies ever.
Kronos.
Made.
You just look at any of these kind of movies that he does. That he's amazing.
And Shape of Water was his weakest by far. Like really weak. Like 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Far better. Much better. Dunkirk. Far better. Get Out. Terrible. I don't know who thinks Get Out is worthy.
Well, Get Out was making a racial statement, so that's why it's a social justice movie.
But people people see it that way. I don't think Jordan Peele is a social justice guy. If you see his comedy, he's a very good comedian.
Yeah, but it's
not that he's a social justice
guy. You can be above
guy,
the culture and then direct something towards the culture.
Yeah, it was very much I mean, the message for me that I got from that movie is that it's just all whites hate all blacks and all whites just want to be blacks. And that's the message that I got from that movie. And in a very simple, when you look at that, it's not even a white character.
And if they can't, enslave kind of.
No. But there isn't even a positive white character in that movie. Not one. Even the woman ends up being a negative white character. And it's like, come on, guys, there has to be something. It was just so negative.
You need the white savior.
No, it's not about a white savior, but just to have something, you know.
Redeeming features.
One redeeming character. Yeah. Not one. Even the cop in the beginning could have come back at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And even if he had died or whatever, or tried to save them and been like, just something to say, not all white people are evil.
Yeah, that's kind of what. That cop scene was very overwrought.
Yeah.
It's so obvious.
I mean, it's so obvious. And that's the problem with that movie, is that it tried too hard to be obvious, like. And
this,
it
is
you.
This is social commentary.
Yes.
And if you don't believe us, we will make sure you know it's social commentary.
Yes, and it's so blunt. It's just like it bashes you over the head with it instead of trying to be subtle about its commentary. And that's what got to me, I think.
I didn't find it funny or scary.
No, it wasn't.
And it was apparently like a horror comedy. And I was like, it's fun. But like, you know, do you think that this deserves any accolades?
Yeah, it is ridiculous. I mean, and some it gets really silly. In terms of a horror movie, kind of silly. Like when once he gets hooked up on that chair and he kind of escapes and he starts like getting out. I mean, why would you pick up a deer head off of the wall to stab somebody with only because it's a stupid horror movie? You know what I mean? Nobody's going to pick up a deer head off the wall and use that as a weapon.
Yeah, okay, this is going to be really political. I don't think Hollywood is great at portraying strong black characters. And when they try, it's trite. Black Panther, Get Out, things like that. Training Day, you know, Denzel wins his Oscar and he's like the badass.
That's because he's a gangster.
So. But he was really good in Training Day, right? But I find Hollywood struggles to really flesh out black characters in films.
There's no nuance to them, really.
And it's very patronizing.
But there are. I mean, there are movies. I find the most successful ones are the ones that actually just treat them as characters.
Exactly. Like, which one? Give me an example.
Yeah, just look at Man on Fire. Because one of my favorite movies is Man on Fire.
Man on Fire.
Tony Scott's one, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, phenomenal.
Yeah. Now, you look at that movie. Yeah. He's a black lead and there's a white girl. And not once, I don't recall in that movie, not once do they say, oh, I'm a black guy and you're a white. Not once. It's a father-daughter kind of story between the two of them.
That's true.
And that's the kind of movies that
that is your film to go watch. If you have never seen Man on Fire,
it's turn off hours of like
that is your film to go see.
Not many movies.
Denzel Washington's best performance, in my opinion, better than Training Day. And
Training Day is good though.
Just amazing filmmaking. It's a full package because the acting is brilliant, the story is superb, and
soundtrack and score
and on top of that, score, production design, editing, cinematography, it's all there. Great film.
Really one of my top movies. And again, like just put in a strong black character that's just a strong character.
But I found Denzel Washington does that.
Yeah, exactly. Equalizer. Man, I'm so excited for Equalizer 2.
Equalizer 2. Yeah, it's fun. What
just cool action films.
Was it American Gangster?
Yeah, maybe with Ridley Scott.
With the Russell Crowe.
Yes, yeah.
Like, in it as well. He's a gangster. He's just a gangster. Like, he's not trying to be like a black nationalist. He's not trying to like fucking take over the world. He's like just a fucking gangster.
Exactly.
And he does it so well.
So that's what we need to do. It's like,
and if you listen to Denzel Washington in public, he's like, you know, this racism bullshit, fuck you guys. Like, just fucking
Morgan Freeman's also the
do
same.
The best you
Morgan Freeman's got no time for this shit.
Yeah. Racism is also got no time for it. It's just like, you know, people are assholes and that's how it is, but you know, just get on with it.
Yeah. So Denzel Washington, he probably does it the best.
Anything else? Oscars, you wanted to talk about.
Oscars.
You brought it out.
Out of the top 10, which film do you think was best?
Well, I Three Billboards, I thought was excellent.
Fuck, it was
the
great.
Dialogue. Look, and I dig that director. What's it? Neil McDonough? Yeah.
Martin McDonough.
Yeah.
He did In Bruges, which is fucking amazing.
Top notch.
Seven Psychopaths, which was a step down,
but
this one.
But had moments, and he's just.
Three Billboards.
The dialogue, he's great. I mean, he's just got sharp, witty dialogue.
And the best thing about that movie? The racist cop, there's no redemption.
Yeah.
No, there's no apology. There's no like, oh, maybe I did something wrong.
It's true to life.
It's all like, no, fuck you. I did beat up black suspects. And then things happen to him, but he never apologizes. He's never...
repentant.
See, there's no Hollywood likes the neat bow.
Exactly.
And life isn't like that.
Yeah.
Like, big movies, and that's what's so cool about Infinity War, even though the bow comes in a year's time.
Yes.
It's nice that for a change, for a movie of that scale,
you can walk out disappointed, basically.
They were willing. Well, I don't know if it's disappointed, it's just a bit shell shocked. I mean, people leave that and think, fuck, wow, did that end like that? I mean, I expected the bow. Where's the bow?
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was pretty cool about Infinity War.
Let's talk a little bit about television series, because I think a lot of people get their entertainment there. Now, I know films like Infinity War, Star Wars, will make money because they're legends before they've been made, essentially. But a lot of people get their entertainment off, as we started, Netflix, Showmax maybe.
So best series of past year, Jonathan?
So tough. I always find it tough to say one because I would say like in categories. Stranger Things, I loved Stranger Things. I thought the second series wasn't as good as the first one. But I really enjoyed that series. That's in that sort of category. I'm still loving Gotham. I know that
they went on for 40 episodes too.
Oh, still going on
after the second season.
No, still really enjoying that. They have their moments where they go down a path and you're like, no, it's just like leave this storyline. It's stupid. But really enjoyed that. I need to give some thought. What's your top?
Ozark.
Yeah, I couldn't. I only got through half of it.
No way, man. Ozark was great. It was The Accountant, Ben Affleck's film, meets
awesome.
Breaking Bad.
Awesome movie.
Meets Breaking Bad.
Sounds interesting.
Like, Ozark is so underrated.
It's so slow.
It's really good. It's not slow.
Okay. Well, I thought it was slow.
It's not slow. It is really good. It's about an accountant who launders money for the mob, and they move him to somewhere in like Minnesota called Ozark. Oh, Fargo. Fuck me. Fargo season 3. Amazing as well. But anyway, Ozark.
I must watch that.
Really, really good.
TV series. Look, it's been difficult, you know, with kids.
Yeah,
we can't really watch the shows that we want to watch during prime time, I guess. So we have to wait until the evenings.
I'll do it anyway.
I was said before the show, the divorce papers are coming. Ramon just doesn't know it.
No, look, we had an episode of Portlandia on the other day, it's the one sequence. Have you not watched Portlandia? It's kind of like a semi-skit show, Fred Armisen, kind of ripping off Portland and their kind of millennial/hipster kind of culture that they got going. It's I think it's a little aged now, but we're only watching it now.
Sure.
And then there was the one scene where they were talking about safe words. And it was a role reversal. He was playing the woman and the woman was playing the guy. I mean, they were talking just about using the safe word, you know, and it starts off with like absolute raucous sex. I've got my 4-year-old like sitting there watching this, and it's like hardcore, you know. You don't see anything, but you can see everything. Then eventually, obviously, the safe word. I mean, like the husband can't get anywhere close. It was hilarious, but you got to watch it. It's like little skits. It's very cool. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah.
But the last shows I watched, Preacher season 2.
I couldn't get past Preacher. I couldn't get past season 1.
You got you season one sucked because it wasn't based on the comics. It was just like, we need to establish stuff so the audiences kind of aren't just thrown into this weird world where the child of a angel slash demon can possess a preacher and burn a church and do all weird shit. So I think they had to establish that universe first for general audiences, and that first season was terrible. Season two follows the first, I'd say, seven, I think, issues, more or less, and pretty accurately of the comic. Brilliant. Like, and they really got.
Can you start off with season two? Can you just lost season one?
You can.
Yeah. Oh, really?
You can. Okay, just, I'll do that. Just ignore season one. The only part in season one that's relevant, it's like literally the first like three or four pages of the comic of issue number one, is that he gets possessed by Genesis, this child of whatever that gives him the word of God, which means that he can tell anybody anything, and it will happen if he uses the word of God. Mm. And then he burns down his church of practitioners. He meets his ex-girlfriend, Tulip, and a vampire, Cassidy, and they go on a road trip to find God because they find out that he's left heaven. So that's what it is. That's the setup. That's basically what they told you in season one that was told in three pages in the comic, which was much more effective. Season two, excellent. They've got much all better. The humor. They didn't hold back on a lot of the stuff, which was great. Like Star, there's the one character, Ken Star, which I thought they'd pull back on the stuff that, you know, the stories around him, and they haven't. I think it's fantastic.
So another one I watched, it's old, Billions, though.
Yeah,
First time I watched it.
I thoroughly enjoy Billions.
It's like Game Theory 101. The strategy of these two protagonists and antagonists is really good, which I...
And I dig that actor, man.
Damian Lewis.
Damian Lewis, yeah.
But what's his name?
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. He's a phenomenal.
No, but he's always been good.
But I mean,
he transforms.
I was actually quite surprised how good that show was. Billions.
Billions is excellent. If you haven't, sorry, I was just looking at what I watched in the last year. And I know this is also older, but Rick and Morty, it's a separate thing, but I love Rick and Morty.
Can't get into it.
Really?
I watched the first three or four episodes.
No, you need to keep going.
I just don't get it.
Yeah, it's one of those that once you get into it, it's very funny. I mean, did you watch BoJack Horseman?
I've watched some of BoJack, but yeah, look, they're all ripping off certain things, but there's the comedy in Rick and Morty is there's a whole bunch of sort of science physics comedy as well, like about multiple universes and about time and about, I mean, the one season ends off and you don't even know if the characters you're watching, even though they're the same characters, are the same characters you've been watching. Like, they basically have killed off all the other characters and you're just watching a whole range of new characters, which kind of matters because the characters you've been watching have been through all these experiences and now they're like, haven't. So it's quite, I find that awesome. It's something that's in a sort of, you could only do it as a comic or cartoon, but it's also dealing with some things in there that are really interesting. Also, they don't sugarcoat, so like the parents get divorced, for example, and it's like proper acrimonious kind of divorce, you know. You don't really see that in like cartoons, and your kids could watch it and it wouldn't really bother them at all, but there's lots of adult theme in there, and a lot of commentary on sort of common social justice stuff. I think at one point Morty sort of is lamenting racism and something like that, and Rick just goes, but you did this or something like that, and just pulls the entire argument apart. It's just fantastic. So I really enjoyed Rick and Morty. BoJack Horseman, I couldn't get into that. I watched like four episodes and then, but it's a commentary on Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's
scathing. Eh?
Yeah. It's heavy.
It is scathing, but hilarious. I find it hilarious. I think I watched the one season.
There are some chirps in there, which are, and then look at the premise is funny. It's a horse, right? He's like a man.
But the biggest asshole on the planet as well, which makes it even funnier. So it's
and he has these parties at his house, which is like overlooking LA, you know, those sort of typical on the hills there, overlooking LA, multi-million dollar houses with like cocaine and all these superficial people. And he just tells them exactly what he thinks of them. And it's very funny.
And that's exactly what it's about, the superficialness of the place. Have you watched Archer?
No.
I watched the first two episodes.
I love it.
It's too obvious.
But it's pretty.
What's it about?
You got to keep away. It's like a ripoff of Spies. You know, like James Bond. He's an alcoholic, but he's so thick as well. Jeez, like.
But he's so thick. Yeah.
But very funny. It's very funny. They rip off that entire kind of. It's like Austin Powers, but without any.
Not slapstick.
No. But it's It's animated.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's very funny. Lots of F-bombs, and it's very funny.
So latest stuff.
Way Off Course. Yeah. The Chef's Table on Netflix. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I actually have.
It's on my list.
I haven't watched it.
It's actually really good.
My wife had it on. And then I watched it, and I did enjoy it.
Firstly, it's shot beautifully. You have to admit, Jonathan. It's shot phenomenally.
It's very well done.
But you get into the philosophy of food with like these chefs, and you think, how interesting can food be? But fuck me, it's interesting.
Well, there's a lot of the documentary stuff on Netflix is kind of revolutionizing documentary.
Oh, fuck me, documentary.
It's a big thing on Netflix.
Wild Wild Countries. More lighthearted than Wild Wild Country. Because Wild Wild Country is intense as well. I watched, if you're into cars, there's one called Fastest Car. Yeah. Which is, it's not very thoughtful at all. Although it is interesting. They basically take a supercar. At the end of every episode, they take a supercar and people with normal cars that they've souped up, essentially, because that's a big thing in the United States, have to race against a supercar. And then whoever wins, ultimately the final episode is all the winners of each episode. And, of course, you look at a lot of these cars and you think they'll never beat like a Lamborghini or a McLaren or whatever it is. And sometimes they do. Each one sort of tells a story about the character who's driving the car. So the one that was quite interesting, the first episode, I think, is this guy who's taken this like 1927 Chev or something like that. And he's basically a paraplegic and he like modified this car, so it's like a truck body basically, but he made it low to the ground because the door is a giant door that just swings open, so he can get in easily from his wheelchair. And he's himself has souped this car up that it's got like something like 600 or 700 horsepower. It's unbelievable. But it tells sort of his story, and it does that with each of the people. I think there's four people per episode, one supercar and three normal cars. I was very surprised by it. I was like, I was looking for something to watch one night. I was like, I just want to watch something for 30 minutes, 40 minutes. Put it on. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. 7 or 8 episodes and quite entertaining, but also making documentary, not like the sort of staid kind of documentary. I think a lot of the documentaries are doing that.
No, they're very good. I mean, the Netflix documentaries are outstanding, I find.
Yeah.
They're generally well-produced. The messages and all of that is some interesting stuff.
But Wild Wild Country is interesting because it's about a
cult.
It's a spiritual group. I'm actually quite sympathetic to them. because basically it's...
They're anarchists.
It's this spiritual preacher from India who is like... outrageously capitalist. He's got like 7 Rolls Royces. And he says, I'm not a Christian. If you smack me, I'll smack you back, bitch. But my principles are based on love and consciousness and all the fucking rest of it. And they buy this ranch in the middle of Oregon in this really shithole, next to a shithole town called Antelope, which is like a retirement village for Christian evangelicals. And over like 6 episodes, I think, or 7 episodes, like the tempo just increases all the time. And a phenomenal, phenomenal documentary. All true, all archive footage. And you see how the American government just puts their nose in where it doesn't deserve to be at all. Like these people are just living peacefully, not doing anything.
Isn't that like part of their MO?
Yeah.
Well, every government's MO, right?
Yeah, every government
knows where it doesn't fucking belong.
But it brings in a lot of different themes from the 80s into it. I thought it was a really, really great documentary.
Let's give it a bash.
Not a documentary, but something else I watched was the latest Black Mirror. Well, the latest Black Mirror came out and it was like, oh, the latest Black Mirror, and I hadn't seen any of them. So I binge-watched from the beginning.
How amazing.
So the first thing I need to say is if you haven't watched it and you do that same thing, you watch from the beginning, which I would suggest, from series 1.
The first episode is fantastic.
The problem is the first first episode, I think, makes people watch it and then they never watch another episode. So I need to tell you that if the first episode gets to you,
just carry on.
They're not all like that. I think that's probably close to one of the most graphic episodes. It's not the most disturbing, actually, but it's definitely one of the more graphic ones. Yeah, get over the first episode and carry on going. But the latest series of Black Mirror was superb. It was brilliant. They're just great themes in there and lots of stuff which really is relevant. You know, Sam Harris and all those guys, Elon Musk, etc., are going to tell you that machines are coming to get us. And I find a lot of their arguments very unconvincing. But Black Mirror makes some very convincing arguments about the dangers of machinery.
Oh, with that mechanical dog thing.
The mechanical dog is one of them. Yeah. The woman who has to score social points to get anywhere ahead in life, to buy a house, you have to have certain social points.
Season three.
That was season three, yeah.
But the best one's called Crocodile.
Oh, well.
The worst best one. Yeah. Because it is just like heart wrenching.
Yeah. That was the insurance scheme one, right?
It's the one where people can see or record
what you're thinking.
Yeah,
yeah, and yeah. What your thoughts were before. It was an insurance scam, basically. Yes. Was the insurance investigation. So I think it does play with very actually important ideas of what technology will potentially be able to do or can already do, and where it might go and the dangers of that. The very real dangers, which don't say humans are going to just be destroyed and made into paperclips, but also say like the way our society functions may be affected in this way. So I thought it was...
Well, do you know why it's called Black Mirror?
What do you see when you look at the Black Mirror?
Yeah,
your screen.
Because even when your device is off, you're still looking at it and you see yourself in it.
Yeah.
That's it, eh?
Yeah.
But and that's what look, every so often these like types of series come out, like anthology series that make you look at like social problems or whatever. I mean, we had Twilight Zone, Outer Limits. They're all kind of the same.
Paranormal Activity, remember that.
They're different, they're different now thematically, but they're the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Twilight Zone was, and some of those stories, I mean, you watch them now, they're still amazing. Well, they still deal with issues.
Yeah, Twilight Zone. I still enjoy Twilight Zone.
It's incredible.
I haven't seen this.
It's old. I mean, some of them from the 60s and they're black and white and whatever, but they're dealing with issues that are outstanding. You're like,
I remember watching them in primary school, on SABC 3.
It's all weird.
Although Twilight Zone could make you shit yourself.
That's why I grew up.
Twilight Zone was scary as hell. And then the other thing more, because I quite enjoy sci-fi, I watched Lost in Space. The reboot.
Apparently it's cool.
It is cool.
Apparently it's not as dark as the trailers make it look.
No, it's not as dark, which is annoying in some respects because there's a lot of we're all going to make the world, we're going to make a new world better and kumbaya and all that crap. So there is some of that, but there's a lot of cool stuff in there with regards to just how they've thought about doing things. A lot of the tech that's very well thought out. The robot is very well done. Mm. Like really, really well done. Sorry, Ramon's vaping in the back, so I've got to. And Ramon's blowing his robot.
Someone said it's a robot penis. Once just said that.
Yeah, so Lost in Space is worthwhile, I think.
Have you noticed we haven't mentioned any DSTV series?
No, we haven't. What's on DSTV?
Only Game of Thrones, I would suspect, is worth keeping it.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Yeah, there's some light sort of stuff. I suppose if you're a Grey's Anatomy fan, you can watch that.
That's cracked my.
There's a series I quite enjoyed called The Good Fight, which was a spin-off of The Good Wife. The Good Wife was actually really good. The last few series,
I thoroughly enjoyed The Good Wife. It was very good.
But The Good Fight was a spin-off. Not as good, but the first season wasn't bad. Second season has...
It's with Christine Baranski, isn't it?
Yeah.
She goes and does her own thing.
She's Diane Lockhart or whatever, her character. The second season's Trump derangement syndrome. Literally, they have literal Trump. One of the episodes is an entire episode about talking about how they're going to impeach Donald Trump and the method and so on and so forth. So... but it's quite, as a courtroom drama, if you like your courtroom dramas, I think at the moment it's probably the best sort of courtroom.
I get in the zone drama. Sometimes with those courtroom
sort of half shows, half, not quite as crazy as Ally McBeal, not quite as good as Boston Legal, which is the best the court best series one. Ever.
Yeah, fuck Suits.
That was excellent.
Boston Legal did much better.
Suits is okay. Suits has gotten so the latest season of Suits was. Just a real cop-out. They had to get rid of Meghan Markle because well, you know, she's not going to be acting anymore. She's going to be cutting ribbons.
Male order bride. I saw you on the show, and
yeah, and so they had to get rid of her, and I was like, cool. So they're going to have this big blow up between the characters, or she's going to die, or like something's going to. No. They're just going to, you know, they just wrote out two main characters. Her and Mark got written out, and
Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know what's his...
it's like, okay, to be fair, I mean, I don't know if you watch Lethal Weapon.
I'll remember his name now, the actor's name, but he's one of the main characters with Gabriel Macht. Harvey Specter's the main guy, Gabriel Macht, and the other guy who's his underling.
The guy who remembers...
Yeah, the guy who remembers didactic memory, he's leaving.
I mean, that's the show.
He's leaving. So, yeah, so the next... They've got another season signed, but I don't know what they're going to do with it.
At least they just spin off, man. Just take Spectre, go off, move to some other place and just call it Spectre. Yeah, and...
well, one of the problems with Suits is that, and the thing that turned people off was it's become too soap opera-ish type of thing. In the beginning, it wasn't so much caring about the people and their lives. I mean, it was you cared about Harvey and his life. Right? And Harvey was this hardcore, successful lawyer who could take on anyone.
To be this,
who also drove supercars in his off time, slept with models and ate in the best restaurants. And now he's kind of like... can't decide whether he loves his secretary or not, and you never really see him enjoying himself.
But have you seen his secretary? Yeah,
I mean, she's a rocket.
I agree, but
that's who I would, if I was. But I suppose you didn't want to keep on the ginger train. I suppose you just wanted to kind of break it up and mix it up a bit. Because she's.
I don't know if I mentioned this before. So before we end, have you seen a movie called L-E-L-L-E by Paul Verhoeven? The guy that Basic Instinct.
Paul Verhoeven's best film.
No, I don't think I did.
L is his best film by far.
No,
it's a French film about a woman who gets raped and does not report it, and carries on life as if, or she tries to understand why she got raped. Phenomenal film. Like it's a psychological comedy.
Verhoeven is brilliant.
Like it's really funny, but it's like these. Weird deep issues, like
is new. Sorry,
Paul Verhoeven's best film is Starship Troopers. So, maybe Al can be his second best.
Total Recall, RoboCop.
No, still Starship Troopers.
Watch Al.
Okay, I'll watch Al. And if you haven't seen Starship Troopers,
I mean, don't watch it
again.
With kids because it's really not for kids.
No, it's a Verhoeven movie. It can't be for kids.
Yeah. No, it's never for kids. But the commentary, the social commentary, is always spot on.
Yeah, but this is his first big European film. And he said he couldn't get it done in America because they're all a bunch of prudish cunts.
Yeah. Well, once Showgirls killed his career in America.
But that was like so awful. It was fun.
Yeah, and I think it was one of those things because he at times he intends to make movies awful. Yeah. I mean, if you look at Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
The young cast, I mean, if you listen to him and whatever, he intended for it to seem like a really bad...
Yeah, but he did things in Starship Troopers that now are seen as routine and no one had ever done them before.
That stuff is mind-blowing.
I mean, breaking the fourth wall, you talk about Deadpool. There's stuff that's in Deadpool that Paul Verhoeven did for pretty much the first time ever in Starship Troopers. That now is routine in... Yeah,
Total Recall.
Is routine in a lot of films.
That constant... pounding you with propaganda, you know, you're ready for the fight, you know, it's all of this kind of stuff. It's brilliant stuff. And it's, I mean, reality TV shows.
Yeah.
RoboCop.
Yeah.
Look at what RoboCop already told that we were going to do in 20, 30 years.
Well, that's a lot of, I read a lot of sci-fi from the 50s and 60s. Yeah. And if you read those authors, Hahn and Sheckley, a little bit of Asimov, you read them now and you're like, yeah, of course, you know. But these are guys predicting cellular phones in the 1950s. They're predicting what Elon Musk is doing now in the 1950s. It's not simple. And they're not – and when I say they're predicting it, they're not going, one day we will have rockets that will go to space. They're not saying that. They're like going into technicalities on how we will do it.
Even some ideas that Nikola Tesla had.
Yeah.
Like now we're able to look at it and go, oh, wait a minute. This guy was actually onto something, you know, like – It's amazing how forward-thinking actually humans are in general and the stuff that we must be thinking of now that's coming.
Yeah, but we overestimate how much. I mean, later. Do you know when the car phone was invented?
In the 80s they already had it.
Take a wild guess. The first car phone was...
Probably in the 20s.
The mass-produced one.
The mass-produced one?
Mass-produced car phone.
I thought that was 70s or 80s.
1946.
Oh, really?
But that used to be like a full-on phone in the car.
In the car.
It was like with the...
But it didn't have... It wasn't attached to...
So what did it use? Radio signal.
And didn't they have one in one of the James Bond movies? I'm sure you had a cough or something.
No, but people think like it's...
Ooh, James Bond. Where's the next James Bond coming?
Soon. Danny Boyle.
Yeah.
Going to be brilliant. Got to clean our mouths. Daniel Craig. Rinse our mouths out of Spectre. We just got...
Yeah, Spectre was disgusting.
Get rid of that Spectre taste out.
How does that happen? Sam Mendes does Spectre, which is absolute shit. But he did the one before that, which I can't remember, which was really good.
It was outstanding. Oh.
It was really good. Like, how the fuck did that happen?
Tight deadlines, expectations.
Never give them two.
And not one after the other. Like that was a big
mistake. Same director.
Oh. Yeah, and you're trying to recapture that lightning, you know, and you got to say, Skyfall, when he made that,
Skyfall, that's the one.
He probably wasn't being as controlled and contained and as much as expected on. Whereas Spectre feels like you need to do this, need to do that.
Also, I mean, Skyfall was like almost a turning point in the entire James Bond series. It told you things about the character you didn't know. It was very deep. And to then make a movie after that, it should never have been him, because you can't do a film like that and then you almost can't better it. So the next film has to be different and it has to move away from what just happened. And if it's the same guy and he's trying to keep the momentum, it's not going to work out.
Well, it's what worries me about Mission Impossible, the new Mission Impossible. Because the previous one, which I freaking loved.
Yeah.
But Emerson's three, all of them are actually pretty good.
It's just the second one.
John Woo.
Watch that one.
The last hour was really good.
Look, the action looks pretty cool and whatever, but I can't watch the movie.
Pretty, because Tandy Newton was great.
Yeah, it's just, there's cool stuff in it.
The 3, 4, 5 and Rogue Nation are really good.
Outstanding. Look, in the trailer for the new one, looks amazing. I'm there without doubt.
But it's Christopher McQuarrie.
But it's the same director, and it makes you it's the same kind of thing. Either they're going to be better because they're a bit more unleashed. If you look at like X-Men 1 versus X-Men 2, or if you look at Batman Begins versus The Dark Knight, in those, they're like, we've proven ourselves, give us the room to move, and let's create what we want to create. And which is why you get those movies. But then sometimes you get...
Yeah, we're the studio, and you've proven that you can make money. Now don't cock it up.
Yeah, and then there's a lot more pressure, and there's a lot more whatever, and it's like, oh, but we need more of this, you know, we need more of that. Audiences love that joke, please put it back in.
Are we getting a new Bond at the end of this year?
No, but they've just signed Danny Boyle. It's Daniel Craig, Danny Boyle. I think they're going into the screen.
I can't believe Daniel Craig's still doing it.
This will be his last one. I think he was contracted for 5.
Yeah, he said he doesn't want to do it anymore. Well,
that was a big problem with the last one. You can see it. My name's Bond, whatever.
Hi, I'm James.
Every time I speak, I get $10,000 for each word.
Yeah, life is so hard, earning millions of dollars, having to kiss beautiful women and race sports cars.
Fucking last thing. What's his name? Guy Ritchie is making a new British gangster film.
Sweet.
Yeah.
The first one since Rock and Roller, which is actually underappreciated. Rock and Roller was actually pretty good.
That was a great movie.
Tom Hardy was gay. It's like, what? Handsome Bobby's a fag. What?
No, that movie was fantastic.
Underrated. Okay. Fucked up King Arthur, like, royally.
I haven't seen that.
Terrible.
I'm holding myself back because it looked cool.
Yeah, but... The effects are not that
great. But I've heard like mixed. Some people are like, it's brilliant. Some people are like, it's okay. Gas. But I'll begin to give it a watch. I like Guy Ritchie. I like King Arthur. It's got dragons, wizards.
Yeah. But no, he missed. Snatch is still the classic. The quintessential British gangster.
Well, Lockstock, Lockstock is grittier.
Well, that's the movie that made him. But I think Snatch was like peak.
Oh, that's his magnum opus.
I love both of them.
You get peak. Yeah, you know, you just snatch it. You're not going to get better than that.
When you got Brad Pitt fighting some big ogre to Oasis. I just need to watch it again.
Brad Pitt was fantastic in that film.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
That was his best acting, and Brad Pitt's not a great actor.
And the thing is, at that point, people were like, no, Brad sucks, like whatever, you know, and then he came out with
You got to give him the right character.
I rate him big time. I'll watch anything with Brad Pitt in it.
Was his caravan's Better Ringle Blue?
Yeah, I think he's fantastic. You did that well, man.
Man, watch Burn After Reading, man. Come on, that is excellent.
Brad Pitt,
I think he's a brilliant actor. Yeah. In my opinion.
Yeah, sure.
So, best actor today, quickly.
Best actor.
Luck today.
I don't know. Go. I'll think about it.
Shut it's hard to you.
There
are great actors.
Benedict Cumberbatch, maybe.
DiCaprio is fantastic.
Oh, Fassbender's fantastic. I mean,
Fassbender's also very good. I would agree with all three of those.
They're really good actors.
Of course, we're being very misogynistic because no female comes up.
Actresses.
Well, we want to look at actresses. I mean, Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, she's superb.
I adore that woman. She is amazing. What an amazing actress.
I hate to say it, Meryl Streep still kills it.
Look, she's a great actress. Yeah. I mean, you could...
I'm going to be the dissenting voice here.
Sometimes you've got to separate yourself from...
No, that's what I'm saying.
My problem with Meryl Streep is I really feel like Meryl Streep is Meryl Streep. And I never really credit actors or actresses who are the same person, even if they act very well, but they're the same in every film. To me, that's not... great. They're very good at acting themselves. So maybe there's two sides to that.
Like Joe Pesci.
Schwarzenegger. Schwarzenegger is always Schwarzenegger. Yeah. You know, you can't, they can't get away from them. I mean, they what was it, Expendables. There was even a movie making fun of the fact that all these characters can't get away from their typecasting. But look, in fairness to Meryl Streep, what ends up happening is Meryl Streep is bigger than any character she plays because you know you're watching Meryl Streep. So then... you end up going, oh, look, it's Meryl, right? So I suppose there is a bit of that, but she's too samey for me.
Well, it's like Al Pacino. I mean, it gets to a point where you're kind of like, what more can you bring? Mm. You know, like, what are you going to bring that surprises me that I haven't seen? Al Pacino, we've seen everything, every emotion. Like, I find him a bit boring to watch now. Like, I don't want to watch him. Irishman,
but this is where they should.
De Niro. I wonder, like, he also.
That's a Scorsese movie.
That's the reason why we're interested. It's because it's Scorsese, and it's also they're using de-aging on him and whatever. And it'll be interesting to see if De Niro brings that passion back. But in all the recent movies, it's just like, it's a paycheck or whatever. Yeah, I'm old. I'm going to die soon.
But so. that's being released on Netflix. It's like going to theaters. Netflix
are producing
it.
That's a massive budget.
Do you know Bright with Will Smith?
Yeah.
Shit movie. It was okay. $90 million.
$3 million for that script, eh?
But Will will take 20 of that.
Yeah, true. But Netflix paid $90 million for a fucking
movie. But it was
also
the biggest movie that they had at the time.
I know, but it blows my mind that I can get a movie that bypassed studios completely straight into Netflix one day. You're like, oh, fuck, let's just watch this new...
Basically a blockbuster.
I do think it's a problem.
At home.
It's a problem.
I think so. I think that movie should be at cinemas. I think
for festivals it is. Because they're like, you need to actually...
Look, you also have to go watch a film with Miguel. Well, maybe we should do like a Renegade Report. We go watch a movie with Miguel. Because you need to understand something. Firstly, if it's a big blockbuster film, it's always IMAX, okay?
Yeah.
But it has to be.
Then you've got to pick the right seating. You can't sit anywhere, okay? And there you go.
That's true.
And you've got to immerse yourself in the film. And you can never really do that in a home cinema, even in a really nice home cinema.
I tried. I watched Dunkirk at IMAX Center. Phenomenal, like, exercise. I was, like, super pumped. Watched it at home.
It's not the same.
It's not the same, man.
It's not the same. You've got to pump that sound. You've got to have a...
It's also the, you know, that IMAX... The screen is really bigger than what you can see. Right. So what it does almost in your brain is that it literally does put you in the film because your entire vision cannot encompass the entire screen, basically. It sort of can, your peripheral, but doesn't really when you're focused. Whereas with a normal film, there's always other things. You know, there's a side of the cinema or there's a side of your bookshelf or whatever it is you've got at home. And so I think that's why you get so much more immersed in the IMAX. Yeah. And
that's why I don't think I'll ever watch Blade Runner 2049 again.
Oh, that was amazing on IMAX.
I watched it in IMAX. Blown away. Best film of last year, like, by far. And I just know you cannot repeat that. Unless, like, your dad was there and you got a porn star cinema in your house. But
I don't want to watch The Revenant again.
Yeah.
I watched that at IMAX. Phenomenal. Let me tell you that there were shots in there where you got the trees above you like this. And it sounds like... I promise you, in the cinema, I was I'm freezing in here. It was amazing.
For people, he's shivering, not masturbating.
No. Also, a little bit of that.
The whole show, though.
A little bit of touching.
That's been going on a little bit of touching the entire time. Cool. So, should we call it quits?
Yeah. This has been a fucking bullshit podcast. I can't remember what we spoke about.
Yeah, so the blurb on this will be... Ramon, Jonathan, and Miguel sit down and talk about movies. That'll be pretty much
that's
it.
About pretty it. Much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Easiest blurb ever.
Easiest blurb for me to do. Awesome. So, Miguel, thank you for coming in again.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Okay. We can do a Renegade Report movie evening at an IMAX.
Just the movies. Starting off with the
marathon.
We'll get them to specially screen. All the Schuster films. We'll do like the three top Schuster films in a row. Beautiful. Right. Do you want to be found? I never know.
Yeah.
At Ronnie.
No, it's at.
Did you change
at the
it?
Moment, it's at Miggy Mac Attack.
Oh, Miggy Mac Attack.
Miggy Mac Attack. Yeah. Okay. You can find me on Twitter.
Cool. And yeah, that's where you can find Miguel. Usually film commentary, but some political stuff as well. He gets annoyed with our government too.
Some arbitrary stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. And as always, you know where to find us. We don't want you to pay us for this podcast, so we won't even tell you about the Patreon. We'll catch you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.